want to thank you for our time this morning and for your kindness that you provide for us in so many ways. And just thank you for the gathering of your people. Thank you for this topic that we have this morning as we finish up discussing the value of grandparenting and grandparents. And bless our conversation. To your glory. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Okay. I passed out an article at the end of last time. Did everybody get a copy? The Grandma Can Curb Egalitarian Parenting Syndrome. Anybody need a copy? So, this is Roseman, and I passed out some things to you by him before, and just general observation about Roseman in general. He's a secular writer. He's not particularly Christian. I don't know what his beliefs really are. He doesn't ever express them in his articles as far as Christianity goes. He's I generally find him to be on the mark in terms of parental attitudes towards kids and some of the problems that we have in raising kids today, some of the way attitudes have changed so much since the 60s and 70s. And he kind of reflects on that in this article. And of course, it made me think of passing this out during this section because we're talking about grandparents, and the title is Grandma Can Cure or Can Curb Egalitarian Parenting Syndrome. But if you read the article, it's like he makes mention of grandma in the last paragraph, and all the rest of it's about you know, his views on parenting, which is fine, but I just thought that was ironic. So he starts off tracing the history of today's egalitarian parenting, as he calls it, back to Karl Marx, which I had no idea if that's where those ideas trace back to. There were probably a confluence of things going on at that time that came together besides the teachings of Karl Marx, obviously, but that was Karl Marx for some time earlier. Anyways, he gets into this description here, and he says that today the typical American parenting practices, and to be fair, unwittingly, what I call egalitarian parenting syndrome, these parents lack confidence in the legitimacy of their authority and behave, therefore, as if the parent-child relationship is constituted of equals. And that's kind of what he's really aiming at here. And of course, you know, we've looked at things from a biblical point of view. We are not equals with our kids. Not to say you don't respect your kids, not to say you don't show them kindness, but he's talking about, you know, kind of getting down on the kid's level or elevating the kid up to a parental level or an equal level to the parent. And he gives this little 10-point quiz, and we can kind of walk through this, see what you thought about some of these. Basically, anything you answer yes to on this quiz is a bad thing in his book. And I tend to agree with him. But we'll see what you think. So here we go. Number one, when I talk to my child, I try to get down to his level, or did when he was smaller. You know, these little things, you get down, oh, honey, you want to, you know, and get down and talk on their level. He's saying, you know, you should speak standing up, and even symbolically, in the way you're standing, expresses a level of authority. I generally end instructions with, okay. That's a big one. That's a big one. What do y'all think about that? I mean, I'm throwing these out here, reading this article. You've already read it, presumably. I just want to see if anybody has any thoughts on that. Does that sound like a problem? Does that sound like, what's wrong with that?
We probably did that because we were trying to see that he understood, but we've changed it to, like, do you understand? Like, can you tell me what I just said?
Yeah.
Seeing how, like, doing an okay as in, like, is that all right?
Yeah.
Asking them all right. Like, we didn't ever do that, but
right.
We would use the okay to make sure that it was clear.
Yeah, I got you.
So
yeah,
like,
yeah, he's talking about.
Since changed our wording, instead of just saying, okay,
yeah.
Like, do you understand?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Have you processed that? When I was in college doing my student teaching, my professor who came to watch me teach said, do not end your commands with okay. And that taught me then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never noticed.
Yeah, that's because what it really does, we're kind of like asking permission.
Right.
You know, and it's just a tacit way of implying that, you know, you have authority here. and they don't. We don't want to communicate that to them. How about this one? My child sleeps with me or us. Anybody have any thoughts on it? Do you agree that's not a good thing? I mean, I think it's a terrible thing, but you know, I run into parents who think, what's wrong with that? especially nowadays, this is very, very common. Very, very common. When my child throws a fit over a decision I've made, I often feel that his reaction means that I may have made the wrong decision. Have you ever experienced that level of guilt? Or you see parents who do that. Like, oh no, maybe I did something wrong. The child's upset. I always want to be pleasing to my child. Again, we're not talking about just make things horrible for them on purpose or whatever, but you should be thinking more about the child's good rather than just what they think is going to make them happy, because they usually don't have the wisdom to know. If my child agrees to do a household chore, I usually pay him for doing so, because adults get paid for doing work. And, you know, again, we've talked about giving your kids responsibility, and they should consider that being part of a household. I give my child lots of choices, like where he wants to sit when our family goes to a restaurant, what would he like for supper, where he wants the family to go on vacation. You know, I think we've talked about some of this too. Like in the beginning, we talked about this is kind of the typical millennial parenting style. Just, you know, it's the inmates running the asylum in a sense. You know, it's got the kids making all the decisions. Again, if y'all have something to say on some of this, jump in here. Even if you disagree, I mean, I'm agreeing with him, obviously. So you have to go against a little current if you disagree with him, but that's okay. we'll hear you. Number 8, I generally explain to my child the reasons behind my decisions and instructions. Bad idea. Now again, you know, if you're just making clarification, you know, like how they do something or something, that might be like you're, you know, making sure they understand. But when you're having to sort of justify it by saying, now the reason I want you to do this, you know, like you somehow have to have a reason that they buy into before they're going to go along with what you're giving them. You know, generally, in the big picture sort of way, especially as your kids get older, you do want to start introducing them to the rationale behind what you're doing. I wouldn't see that as in conflict with what he's talking about here. I think we're talking, especially smaller kids, you just tell them what to do. You don't ask a lot of, or do a lot of explaining. I allow my child to call adults by their first name. What do y'all think about that one? That's kind of old school. not to disagree with that idea. Anybody have thoughts on that?
So do you agree with that?
Huh?
So what do you think that should be?
I've always felt like kids should call Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so. Not, you know, have my, if I had a little kid or a granddaughter or something like that, walk up and say, you know, hey, Karen, hey, you know, like you're just a buddy kind of thing. Now, sometimes I think the Southern style is to put Miss or Mr., you know, Mr. Bob. That's okay, you know.
That's what I've noticed, that most of the time now it's just kind of like, Miss Alice, Mr. Martin, and it's still shown that.
Yes, I think it's still a way of of showing some respect. It's just the idea is, you know, you're not just you're just not one of the adults. It recognizes some respect for the for your elders, basically, which is I think a biblical idea. And number 10, I often get into arguments with my child. Again, it shouldn't be any arguments. You tell them what to do. If they don't do it, consequences will follow, be it discipline or what have you. He says if you score 60 or above, in other words, if you answer 6 of those questions at least with a yes, you're suffering from egalitarian parenting syndrome. And he said the best remedy is to get advice from your grandmother, because she remembers how it was done before Karl Marx introduced these ideas or what have you. So there you have it. Any other thoughts on that? Or I guess kind of a no-brainer in a way, but
And this kind of harks back to some of the stuff we talked about much earlier in the class in many ways, but I thought it was worth of kind of going back through, especially since he ties it into the difference between how older people tend to view raising kids from their day versus how it's done today. Okay, we've been looking at the challenges of being a grandparent. I guess I should say, you know, we're looking at all big picture, joys, opportunities, and challenges of being a grandparent. We talked about joys and opportunities in the beginning. We're going to cycle back to that at the very end. But last week and for a while this week, we're going to be talking about the challenges. So far in challenges, we've seen challenge number one, you may end up not getting grandkids, and we had some rather extended discussion that related to that, and you know, talked about the influence you might want to have with your kids to think about them having kids in the future. We said ultimately it's in the sovereignty of God, obviously, but whether you have them or not, there can be lots of reasons why you don't, but a lot of discussion on that one last time. We talked about your son or daughter could end up having a grandchild out of wedlock. Nobody would wish this on anybody, at least I hope we wouldn't. But it can happen. And we talked about balancing their continuing to have love for them and have love for the child born out of wedlock. But at the same time, don't jump in and try to take away from what they're responsible, you know, they had the child, they're responsible. And you want to, you know, make sure that you keep things as much as possible moving in that direction. Don't step in on their behalf. It'd be a big mistake. I have a sister who's, she has some, I guess you consider them sort of special needs kids, or in a sense, they're autistic, kind of extreme autistic. And, one of her girls ended up getting pregnant from some illegal alien guy or something, a Mexican guy. They live in Arizona. And so my sister had her move in and have the baby, and my sister does all the taking care of the baby, all that kind of stuff, and lets the girl continue to see this guy. And she had another baby, you know, and this can really go south on you. It's a tough situation. It's hard to know, like, when she first found out, the first pregnancy, you know, her and I talked about it, but I think she decided to go her own way, you know, how she approached it, and I think she's going to have some tough times for a while here trying to deal with that, plus she's not doing much good by her daughter. Challenge number three, taking an interest in your grandkids and making time for them. Relationships take time, regardless of where you have them, and so as a grandparent, some people do this real naturally, some have to work at it. And I cited myself as an example of somebody who has to work at it. And I cited my wife as somebody who tends to be more naturally inclined to go this way. And then we talked about the term generation gap, where basically there's going to be a difference in years and culture between you and your grandkids. And that can create some challenging situations. Sometimes it's just going to be a matter of indifference, just they just do things differently than you do because that's the way things are done today and not the way you did them. Or sometimes it could be a moral issue, in which case we want to try to persuade them to think otherwise. So those are the challenges we looked at so far. Now we're ready to get challenge number five. Not playing favorites. This can be a tough one. If you have more than one grandchild, you are likely to like and relate to some of your grandkids more than you do others. Not necessarily, but, it's quite possible. In spite of this, I urge you, as I did with your kids, when we were talking about parenting, we talked about the same idea, don't play favorites. Be even-handed in the treatment of your grandkids. And this can be something that's real hurtful to your grandkids as a grandparent when you show favoritism, and there can be different reasons why that happens. Unfortunately, excuse me, you know, my mom and dad unfortunately tend to do too much of this. The two older ones were adopted,
And for some reason, I don't know, they never say anything about it. It's not explicit. It's just sort of unspoken. But you notice when arrangements are made or deals are made or things are laid out or whatever, it's like the two older ones are sort of not really in the family. They don't say it like that, but it's just like they just kind of get left out. I'm like, what was that all about? You know? And I don't really understand it, honestly. But and sometimes you can just have a situation like where, you know, you really connect with one of the grandkids, especially as they get older. You know, oh, that's my favorite grandchild. Well, careful with that one. That's the, be careful with that one. Okay. Challenge number 6. The son or daughter, or son or daughter-in-law, this could be any of the above, who is parenting your grandkids may be at odds with you in some way, and this can negatively impact your role as a grandparent. For example, they may significantly reject your values in some important area or areas and raise your grandkids accordingly. This can happen. And you're like, oh my. Or they may have a bad relationship with you, which in turn will negatively affect your relationship with your grandkids. This can get really, it can be extreme or it can be in minor areas. You're probably going to experience it to some degree in minor areas. It's just the point of life because things change. I wouldn't even almost put this in this category, but sometimes I'm just speaking to you as a grandparent now with our son and daughter come over every day, every Sunday for lunch or whatever. We have a great relationship with them, have a great relationship starting off with our granddaughter who's about 9 months old. But every once in a while, you get into this kind of thing where they've been taught some things that is the thinking of the day or something that they've come across they think is the big thing. And we're kind of like, really? You know, it just puts you in an awkward position as a grandparent a little bit. I mean, to some degree, we tend to roll with that. Sometimes it's like, I don't know if this is a good example or not, but well, they were taught, it'd be interesting to see what y'all were taught. What were you taught about babies? Lay them on their back, lay them on their stomach? Which one
side.
Is it?
Huh? Side. Your side.
Oh, side. On the side. Okay. Sorry, my directional hearing way off. That'd be interesting. That's kind of like the Solomon approach, right? We split the difference. We were always taught that you put the baby on the stomach because if they ever spit up, they won't choke on their own spit up. They were taught that you never put a baby on its stomach. Unless they have a real big spin-up problem, then maybe. But it should always be on their back, because if you put them on their stomach, their face will go into the bed and they'll suffocate and they'll result in SID or whatever. You know? So, I don't know. That's a little thing, but it's a small thing. I wouldn't even almost put it in this category, but it just kind of made me think of it. If you want to think in minor areas where you're going to have these little differences because of the way their kids are being taught or whatever. And sometimes, like we just watched Ellie, our granddaughter, for the first time overnight. Oh, wow. Had her all night long. And mom kept, you know, worrying about, you know, the baby's okay. That's natural. Mom's going to do that, you know. And my son had to remind her, look, in fact, I think she stayed with us for a while and stayed with her parents for a while. So it wasn't particularly picking on either one of us, but it was just kind of like, oh, my, the baby's going to be all right. And my son says, they both raised a lot of kids, and they both kind of know what they're doing. Don't worry about it. So there's that kind of natural rub that comes in from different ways of looking at things, different standards, or just not realizing that, you know. And we did do things different back in the day, I will say. We didn't have car seats. Our kids all survived without car seats. I know, it's the law now, you have to do it. But, you know, it's just like, I still can't quite get used to it. Like, oh, yeah, that's right, we can't go anywhere without the car seat, you know. And that would stay in that thing forever now. We raised kids, and this was the safety mechanism right here. When you hit the brakes, you know, and they all survived, every one of them. I know, there's reasons for all that stuff. Okay. But on a serious level here, though, And this can really be a big deal. My sister, years ago, when she first had her kids, this is, 20 plus years ago, whatever, I think, mysteriously decided that she wanted no relationship with my mom. Nobody knew why. Like, really? And she just pulled out. Mom didn't get to see the grandkids. My mom didn't get to see the grandkids at all. Or if they did, it was like real supervised supervision, like on Christmas Day only or something, That was about it. And maybe a birthday, I don't know. That is rough. That's a tough deal. That is a big challenge if that kind of thing happens. And I know other grandparents who are in that kind of situation where we know one lady who's a grandmother, and she raised her daughter. Unfortunately, she was an alcoholic during the time she raised her daughter, so there's some fault to be laid at her door. Her daughter grew up to be an alcoholic. Imagine that. And now the daughter, she got her nose out of joint about something that her mom said or did or something. And she said, that's it. You don't see the grandkids anymore. Done. So those are tough things. You do what you can in those situations, but they're really hard to deal with. And I think even legally, I've seen stuff like this. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer, but the grandparents have rights. Legally, they can actually sue for visitation or something like that. I don't know. That's tough to get into that. Challenge number 7, the son or daughter who is parenting your grandkids may try to use you as a babysitter more often than you would like. I'll be interesting to hear what you all think about these. As a grandparent, you will most likely want to spend time with your grandkids, but babysitting, especially if you become their daycare, is your choice, not necessarily an obligation. I just throw this in. I'm not... If you're a grandparent and you want to be the daycare for your kids and your kids like it and you like it, I'm not here to tell you that you're doing something wrong. That's not the point. But what I'm thinking of is like, I have an aunt. She raised her kids, and I think her oldest boy got married. They had a kid, and they're both working. I think they're both really responsible. He's like a firefighter, and I don't remember what his wife does. And so they just use my aunt, their mom, as their daycare, basically. She had that kid every day, all week long, whatever hours they worked. And she kind of resented that. She accepted it, but she resented it. And a lot of times when she was talking to other people, it's like, oh, I got the kid again. Well, if you don't want to do that with babysitting, talk to them and say, look, I like the grand son or daughter, but I don't want to be the daycare. But try to make some other arrangement on that. Yes?
That's what I see our world going to. Parents are not raising their kids. Their grandparents are. And then in their next generation, they will raise their grandparents.
Yeah.
Both parents go to work, drop the kids off at mother or mother-in-law.
Yeah.
And then when they retire, their kids are going to both work, and then they'll take care of their kids. So we're going to turn into a
grandparent-raised society.
Yeah.
I just think that's out of kilter. Not to take away from... I want to tread lightly here in a sense because, I want to recognize different preferences and things and how people like to do things, different styles. But I just really think that parents ought to be responsible for the kids primarily. Grandparents ought to be in a more secondary position in terms of the raising. They should be a big influence, as we talked about. They're going to want to spend time. We talked about all this, but not so much so that it begins, the scales tipped where the parents really aren't being parents. They're just kind of living a carefree life, and here you go, Mom and Dad.
Grandparents aren't going to parent those kids.
Yeah, they are, and that's not good either. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough deal. So much I could try to say about all that. I'm not trying to solve the world's problems. I'm just trying to lay out here, some of the different things that may come your way and give you a chance to think about it, interact about it. And this is the worst case scenario of all. Your son or daughter may end up with having a severe problem that significantly interfered with their ability to raise your grandkids. And this can take all forms.
For example, your daughter goes through a divorce. Let's say she was a stay-at-home mom and she was married to a guy that was fairly well-to-do. She goes through a divorce and suddenly, temporarily unable to financially provide for her kids. Of course, legally, a lot of times there's provision for that, but what if the guy's a deadbeat dad or something? You know, that can be a tough one. And helping shepherd her through that situation. You said her or daughter and their spouse suddenly dies, leaving your grandkids without parents. You might presume that the grandparents would have to step in and take them, and then maybe that's okay. In our case, when Sandy and I were raising our kids, we always legally had somebody designated as the guardian should we die. It wasn't my parents. It wasn't that I thought my parents were bad parents or anything like that. We just thought on balance, for a variety of reasons, we didn't want them to get the kids if we were to die suddenly, both at the same time. And that's something for you to think about. How do you want that to play out if that happens? You may say, oh, no, my mom and dad would be totally on board for that, and I would really like that. That's fine. if that's what you want to come back to on that. But just different thoughts on that. Your son or daughter becomes highly irresponsible to a point where they're no longer fit to be parents. So they're alcoholic, they're meth addicts, they're in prison. I mean, crazy stuff can happen. So a lot of challenges can come your way. They're in the sovereignty of God, obviously, and you do what you can to deal with them as they come your way. But it doesn't always go well. But I would say on balance, these are more exceptions to the rule, at least we hope, for people who raise their kids well. So I didn't want to end on a negative note. I learned my lesson on that one in the last session. I think we ended on a really negative note, and I felt real bad next week. Like, boy, I really ended it on a bad note. So I want to come back full cycle. We talked about challenges. Those challenges aren't potential. They are there. They can be there. And I don't want anybody to be naive about what the future may bring. But we still want to come back to the joys of being a grandparent. We started with a couple of sayings on some of the other sections, and so I thought I'd pass a few more of these on. A grandmother is a babysitter who watches the kids instead of the television. I thought that was cute. And no cowboy was ever faster on the draw than a grandparent pulling out a baby picture out of the wallet. A little bit dated, but now it would be a bring them up on the phone, but you get the idea. So, why? Well, because despite the various challenges, and we don't want to, ignore reality, despite the various challenges you face as a grandparent, there is normally a special pride in being a grandparent, a special excitement that grandparents have in getting to spend time with their grandkids. And so on balance, Proverbs 17:6 remains true. Grandchildren are the crown of the aged. And that doesn't mean you can't have challenges and have those moments, but on balance, it's something to look forward to. It's something that, I've certainly enjoyed being in that role, and I hope you do too. All right. I want to open it up for questions, and I don't have to look at my watch. I got a nice big clock in the back of the room so I can see what time it is. I got rid of that clock that I can't see. Actually, it's still around. If somebody's upset about it, we can talk about it, but hopefully not. Okay, so here's some questions. Have you ever witnessed a case of grandparents playing favorites with their grandkids? And you can say whatever you want. If you have, you can share that. You can talk about maybe how that was handled or how it should have been handled. Kind of an open question there. This is similar to it. Have you ever seen a situation where the grandparent, being at odds with their son or daughter, negatively affected their relationship with their grandkids? And again, you might want to share how that worked out or how you think it should have worked out or whatever you want to say on that. Do you think there is such thing as a grandparent being asked to babysit too much? I mean, we kind of already started talking about that a little bit when Audra spoke up during that section, but maybe you have some more thoughts on that. And then, again, to end on the positive note, what thing are you most looking forward to
in becoming a grandparent. Because I think, on balance, grandparenting is a very positive thing scripturally, and I think, generally speaking, in the experience of most people. So we want to keep the main focus to that, while acknowledging reality. So there you go. All right, this is where y'all can jump in. And again, if you want to bring up something else that I talked about that I didn't think to ask a question about, by all means, yes.
I may have missed it, but included in the challenges, was there the instance of your daughter or son dies and the other parent of your grandkids remarries and you are not, you know, you're the third set of grandparents?
That's interesting. I didn't specify that particular situation. I guess we could kind of roll that up under difficulties, but yeah, that's, and I can see that could be a problem. Yes?
I actually thought that and I think
Schneider
and Karen and Jared
knew Josh Grenier. Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Who?
Josh Grenier.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He had a wife at 30, died of leukemia, and they had a son. And her parents told him, his mother-in-law, said, "You are now our son. Whoever you marry will be our daughter-in-law. And your kids with her will be our grandkids."
Oh, wow. Good, good.
So that was a big wow.
That was a good way to handle that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I guess I should throw that up. If you think of any other challenges that I haven't particularly delineated, there are many. I don't want to beat this into the ground with them. Everybody go, oh, why? I don't know if I want to do this.
One of the biggest ones, you know, even in our family that we struggle with, is the multiple divorces.
Yeah.
And how it's put a strain with the kids and the parents, because, you know, you can't have both parents at a birthday party for the kids, and you know, because the animosity that's still there, the anger issues, all the emotions, and then us trying to protect the little ones and not having to deal with family drama, because a sin that started two generations ago is now still filtering down, and they feel the effects of it.
Mm.
But trying to get the grandparents to understand that and to see what it's doing to their grandchildren and to their relationship.
Yeah.
You always feel like you're coming out short end of the stick, basically, because they won't admit that there's consequences to sin, and they're still having to pay those consequences, but they don't want to, and then they think everything will be hunky-dory, but it can't.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you fix those types of situations? It's like creating, you can't just have, you know, the family get together at Christmas and everything's going to go great, and, you know, we're going to be here on Christmas Eve and we'll go to the in-laws on Christmas Day. No, it's like you have to have four or five different holiday meals, because you have to go to all these different places, and that starts to put a huge strain on the kids, and they're not enjoying it. They pick up on that.
Yeah.
So it's trying to find this balance of what is healthy and how do you keep that relationship still there, because you want them to have relationships with their grandparents, but at the same time you're trying to hold back on just, hands-free, you know, you guys go off, because there's trust issues, I don't know.
Yeah, that's you bring up a good point there, and you guys could probably speak to that better than I could in many ways, because you probably have more first-hand experience. Well, I know you would have more first-hand experience. I've been very fortunate in my own life that we've had very little divorce in our family, which I'm very glad. I mean, not totally without, but, you know, just at the level you're talking about. So it didn't pop into my mind as quickly as it might for you, and so it's good that you bring that up. And if you guys have other things you want to say along that line, I'd welcome that, because that is very much a reality. We're just having all these blended families and re-blended families, and trying to unscramble an egg just can't be done. But you do the best you can. You have to do something with it. Like I say, you got to say something to the little kids, and you got to figure out how you got to deal with the challenge of not, you know, these two can't be together, and this, oh my goodness. Oh, what a tangled web we weave. To quote Shakespeare.
Well, I'm looking forward to helping my kids homeschool their kids.
All right.
That's my skill set, I think.
Yeah.
Where I could really help them. And we've had such great family vacations of making memories together.
Yeah.
We still talk about things that happened on vacation and laugh. And Paul wants to buy an RV and take his grandkids on vacation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and I didn't even, I think, to give that emphasis, but that's something that grandparents often are in a position to do, is to sort of underwrite a vacation for, you know, a lot of times parents are struggling just to get by with their kids, not always, but, you know, a lot of times, and sometimes by the time the parents are far enough down the road, they're established, the grandparents are far enough down the road, they're established, they can provide that, and what a great opportunity for them all to spend time together, too. So it's a win-win. Yeah, that's a great thing to look forward to. I like that. I think, in fact, my mom and dad, since I beat up on them a little bit this morning, none of this is personal, I'm just trying to go out with illustrations, but my mom and dad, because they could and wanted to, they love to go to California to vacation. They have a little resort place where they go for a week every year on the beach. My mom loves the beach. I love the beach. And so one year they put rented a bunch of separate condos, one for each of their kids, and invited them to bring all of their kids. And so we could all spend time together, my grandparents and parents and kids, and there was a bunch of us. And we all got to spend a lot of time together. That was a real memorable week. It was a lot of fun. So those kind
together
of things.
Together yet
can be.
Separate. It's important.
What's that?
Together yet separate.
Yeah, I like that they gave us some space, you know, so that, you know, like my brother who has, you know, a bunch of little ones, and they were kind of noisy and stuff like that. I get to go over and enjoy them for a while, and then okay, and then go home. Good night. You know, so yeah, the separateness was nice. I like that. It cost, I'm sure, my parents a pretty penny. I didn't ask them how much, but I can only imagine. California is not cheap on anything. That was a good idea. That was a worthwhile investment. Other thoughts? Because according to the big clock in the back, we still have some time.
It's also possible that you're going to be accused of showing favoritism if you have to get on to one grandchild more than the other.
Well, that's true.
I mean, it's not a matter of favorites. It's just that one, you know, gets fussed at more.
Yeah.
Because of what they do or don't do.
Yeah. And that happens to parents. That happens to grandparents. You know, yeah, sometimes it's the behavior that the kids require.
So I guess that's what I'm asking. Is it so important to not show favoritism so that it's better off just to ignore that situation so that it doesn't be perceived as favoritism?
Well, I mean, obviously you want to factor that in, especially if that seems to be creating an issue. That's kind of an individual judgment you're going to have to make, you know, in a particular situation, because you're going to have to say, what is the impact? How is it being perceived? How fairly is it being perceived? It may be you need to talk it out a little bit and say, look, you know, I'm not picking on this one, but I feel like there's some attention needed here. But typically, as a grandparent, you're in a secondary role, at least I see it, and so that you're not the one that has to ultimately.
I guess I was thinking if you're keeping them all, you know.
Oh yeah, well, during the time you're keeping them, well, you know, you just got to deal with.
I don't
whatever
know if that ever
up.
Happened with mine, because I got left with grandparents, but I don't know if they ever felt like. Did you ever feel like it was favoritism?
I don't even remember favoritism being on my radar as a kid. You know, whether
well,
it's
good.
Parents or adults, if anything, I would just be annoyed, like, oh, Leanna, why are you so perfect? You know, anything else. It wasn't my parents. It was like, why do you not get upset?
Yeah.
You know, so, no, I don't, I never said, but though I do remember feeling like my grandparents made me feel like a favorite, because they were private about their generosity, and then I would figure out, oh, they're doing this for this mm-hmm. cousin, or they did this for my, and it was easier to see within my own family because it was so large.
Yeah.
But it made me feel special, oh, they're doing this for me, to come to find out they did it for all of them, but they're just doing it discreetly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's good.
I think a big thing would be location. If you have grandparents who live close by one set of grandkids, but then, say, their other children, you know, have moved to other states, so those grandkids are out of state, they're not going to see their grandparents as much as the ones who live a couple blocks away.
That's true.
So there's going to be a stronger relationship between the local grandkids versus the ones who are out of state. So just keeping in mind, from a grandparent's perspective, how it takes more effort on that aspect, but it's very, very important, because when the families get together, what's going to happen is all the grandkids are going to be mixed up, but they're going to immediately pick out the ones who have the tight relationship with the grandparents, and it's going to make it feel like they're the favorites because they've got the pet nicknames, you know, for grandma and grandpa. They all of a sudden became, you know, Poppy and, you know, whatever it may be, but they have, you can tell there's a stronger relationship, and that immediately makes the rest of the grandkids kind of feel like they're on the outskirts and they don't know how to have that same thing. It's not intentional, it's just, it happens because of logistics. So it's not a matter of spoiling or buying things to give them. It's the relationship aspect. It's getting to know them, talking to them, having those conversations, you know, picking up the phone and asking the questions, and even if you get a one-word answer, but still trying. It's the effort to get to know the grandkids and let the grandkids know the grandparents that you wouldn't see as much of that. It wouldn't feel like favoritism. Because it's all the same level of relationship with all the kids.
Yeah, you make some good points in there. That's true. You know, the distance thing. We did talk about that just a little bit, but it's a bit of a challenge that you do have to work to overcome. And there is the idea of perceived favoritism versus actual favoritism. That's, you know, like the distinction that even Nancy was making about in another regard. You're talking about distance. She was talking about behavior. But there are different ways. It's, you know, you could be branded as showing favoritism, but you're really not. You know, and but perception is reality sometimes for a lot of people, and I always take that as, you know, we need to talk about it. If I feel like it's something being perceived a certain way in the family, I try to talk about it. People may not listen to you, or they may not want to talk about it, or they may take it badly when you try to talk about it, or maybe you don't do a great job, I don't know. But, you know, I try. I want to try to address those things. But, yeah, and I can definitely see the distance thing. We're experiencing, like with the latest grandbaby, she comes over every Sunday for lunch. The other grandkids, for the most part, I think they lived local for a short while, they mostly grew up in other states. And it wasn't, I'm not, you know, accusing them. They moved for good reasons, or had to do with their work and things like that. But, but it did create a challenge for us to try to bridge that distance. And sometimes it's just like, I just didn't want to make that 12-hour trip. You know, my wife was much more willing to make it than I was. but that made it tough. Of course, they would always come home every year for Christmas, at least usually, or something like that. But again, once a year for Christmas versus every Sunday afternoon, there's going to be a difference just by virtue of the circumstances there. And I don't think we'll be perceived as showing favorites, but who knows? We'll deal with that if it comes up. Any other thoughts? We had so much discussion last time, we had to cut it off. So I thought, well, better leave one more room for discussion, but then that picked us hard of an issue this time. So.
That was actually one of the issues.
Okay.
When the out-of-town cousins visit grandparents and the local cousins come over too.
Okay.
You never get time with the grandparents, just you. Mm-hmm. Where they want to come see you too, which is fine, but it's every single time we go, another family is there too.
Oh, yeah.
So we never get time with the grandparents, just us.
You know, one of the things that my parents do that helps that is we stay with my parents. And so, I mean, because we could stay with my sister or, you know, but we go to Amarillo because I have a sister who has kids in Amarillo. I have a brother who has kids in Lubbock. So they're close. And then, but when we go, we stay with my parents. So that way we have mornings with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We have evenings. And then they have time. But, yeah, I mean, you have to make a point to.
Yeah, that is a good way to address that. I see this kind of play out even with our kids sometimes when they come to visit. And it's funny how sometimes how families kind of work. The general default thing when, like, since we're the grandparents, parents, whatever, most of the get-togethers happen at our house or in town here. So at Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever the big thing is, or everybody's coming to town, you know, they're all going to end up hanging around the house and we're all going to be together. None of us are individually by ourselves. And We came up with a system, we call it the whiteboard system. And we get out a whiteboard in the beginning of the time, everybody's together. I call a meeting. I say, okay, we love everybody, we want to have lots of visiting time with everybody all together like we always do, but we also want to carve out a little bit of time for people to pair off and get together more individually. And I want everybody to think about that. And so they, you know, there's usually
thing people have in mind, like, well, I want to spend an afternoon with Jackie, you know, whatever. Okay, so Mom and Jackie, when do you guys want to do that? Jackie, when are you available? And we just put it all down so that we know Jackie's got that blocked off, and just she's getting with my wife, and you know, and then Josh and Aaron get with Jackie and Jason, you know, and they all can just kind of divvy that up, and it kind of puts some structure to things, and it kind of brings some, because if we didn't do that, that would be the default. We'd all just hang out, and it'd be okay. But I really value that individual time, like what you're talking about. I think that's really precious and helpful. So yeah, but it takes, and of course you might not be able to get the whiteboard out since you're not in the driver's seat in that situation. But you can maybe try to, you know, work out something like what Karen talked about, or maybe something else. You know, just make it known that you'd like that, or that they would like that, and you know, just kind of make it happen. See what you can do, anyways.
Yeah, I think the parents can help that. And knowing, like, I know that Jaden will sit in anybody's lap and let them read them the story. And so, like, that's what I encourage my parents to do. Like, oh, you know, take this book to Grandpa. I can read, you know, like, and that. So I think you can help that. I mean, knowing what is going to attract your kid, even if there is tons of grandkids, like, he'll stop and he'll go if,
yeah,
no matter what's going on. So I think that can be helpful, too.
Yeah, it is.
I'd like to hear anybody's thoughts on the babysitting one. I mean, because obviously we're not close to babies, you know, close to our parents to have that that babysitting. I know my parents, when all of us are together, they give us one evening where they watch all 8 grandkids.
Oh, yeah.
And we have sibling dates, so
yeah,
me and my siblings and our spouses all go out. But I'd be interested in hearing thoughts on.
Yeah, because we talked about the possible abusive situation earlier. Or what could
I have no doubt that it can be abusive.
Yeah.
But
that doesn't sound like what you're talking about.
Oh, right.
That's a different thing. Yeah, Aaron.
Yeah, my mom's a nurse, and her schedule works out that she works a lot of hours, but then we'll have 1 week off a month, something like that. And she gets really protective of that week.
Okay.
She wants that to be her recoup time, and so she gets kind of sad whenever when she ends up babysitting a lot during that week, whenever she wants that,
sure,
know, kind of to herself. So
yeah.
She's expressed that to us before, but that's about it when it comes to babysitting too much. So
yeah, well, and she's wanting that, obviously, is what you're saying. So that is very natural. That is good. What I was addressing in terms of the abuse is where the push is coming from the kid, you know. And that's just something the kids need to watch out for. But I'm not saying you guys are. Obviously, it sounds like it's the other way around. They're wanting to see the kids. So
well, at the time when she feels bad to say no, so she might end up babysitting more than she wants to.
Oh, I see. Just saying. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because she is protective of that time, but she, at the same time, she doesn't have an excuse. It's all week off.
Okay.
Not so much from us. It's from the others. We jump on my parents more.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's.
Ours would be coming from the opposite end of my mom, would be the one pushing, trying to tell us, don't worry about it, I'll watch him.
Yeah.
And this coming from, I mean, still having a text message when we were talking about my pregnancy with Daniel and how she was already planning on coming and, you know, when did she think the baby was going to be here? She knew it would be early, but, you know, what was I going to have to be on bed rest again and all this? And she's like, well, I'll be there.
Yeah.
Man, Mom, she's a few short months from passing away, and she was still, no,
oh, wow,
you need me, and I'm going to be there, and I'm going to watch those kids. So it was, towards the later end of her life, it was us trying to be like, no, Mom, no, it's okay, we've
yeah,
got it, we'll figure out a way. But she wanted to do it.
Mm.
She looked forward to those times, and again, the distance thing, because she wasn't in state, so it was a big deal for her to be
yeah,
able to come, and she loved to be able to do that. We appreciated any time.
Yeah.
Good.
And that's good. I mean, it's good that you appreciated her. It's good also that you tried to protect her time to some degree, recognizing her needs too. So that, and I mean, that's one thing I appreciate about, like, Josh and Aaron with our relationship. They do the same thing. They really, I mean, Samuel take them any time, you know, but they're always real appreciative when we watched her, Ellie, and you know, they just they express that in a lot of different ways. So that's helpful. It just makes everything go a whole lot better.
I don't remember ever being told no. I know Ken's mother kept him a lot daytime, and then my parents would keep him, like, if we were gone a week trip or something. Generally, they would stay there. But
It makes me wonder how often they thought, oh, don't ask me again, because they just always said sure. I mean, it wasn't a...
Yeah.
So it just, I mean, so that's why that's kind of my attitude too. I don't think about, you know, I mean, yeah, if we're here, sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, they just set a good example because they were just very good about keeping them. And I know it wasn't always easy, but
all right. Well, I'm able to see our clock and seeing that we're about out of time here, so let me wrap us up here. Father, thank you for this time, for this discussion, and for this opportunity these last couple weeks to reflect on the topic of grandparenting and all that that entails, and the many blessings especially to come with that. And just pray for everyone here this morning who have that on their horizon, that they would have something really to look forward to in grandparenting, that they would approach that in a way that is helpful and a real blessing, as it ought to be. And we just pray for your sovereign providential care in that situation. Provide them with that opportunity to protect them against some of the more difficult things that people sometimes face in these situations that are hard. And help them, but whatever they face, even if they face difficulties, we pray that they would always look to you as they do in every other area of life, and that you would be their provider and the one who cares for them. Christ in your prayer, amen. Dismissed.